Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, welcome to a special Saturday night edition of the Weekly Worldview. We're coming to you from the McBurney compound on a Saturday night because tomorrow is Resurrection Sunday, and we will be worshiping the Lord in the morning is what we will be doing. And then appropriately, on Resurrection Sunday, it appears that the sun will come out again in Colorado. And after worshiping the Lord in the morning, we are going to honor the Lord's command, or his, I don't think it was a command, but the Lord took note that a righteous man treats his animals well. And so we're going to honor that by completing the aviary net over the chicken run tomorrow. Lord willing, it will happen. And the chickens can move out of my bathtub into their walk-in chicken coop, heated, air-conditioned walk-in chicken coop. Well, it's natural air conditioning. But the heat, it will be heated, no doubt. So that's the plan for Sunday. And we're just going to be worshiping the Lord all day because it's Resurrection Sunday. And there's no better way to honor the Lord than to gather with fellow believers, worship Him, and then work. So that's the plan. That's why we're coming at you on Saturday night. Now, I'm not sure, I know what you people want me to talk about. You want me to talk about the National Enquirer and terrorism and men's rooms and ladies' rooms and primaries, elections and voting and candidates and all of that. And I'll get to some of that. But I don't know if I want to start with iPads or with haircuts. A couple of big issues. I think I'm going to start with iPads because every parent loves to brag on his children. I said his children, yes, but that includes my extremely attractive audio engineer. She's included when I say his because the masculine encompasses the feminine in the English language. That's why I didn't say his or her children. Oh, geez. I just do that. I speak the King's English. Thank you very much. So every parent loves to brag on his children. So I personally have never purchased an iPad in my life. But here at the McBurney compound, the place is littered with iPads because the various vendors that I work for, they have sales contests, and they're either giving away iPads for the sales contest or they're giving away something I don't want. For example, a weekend in Miami for one person. So, they had a sales contest. Win a weekend in Miami, and I won the sales contest. And, it was for one person. And I said, that doesn't work. I said, how about a couple of iPads? Anyway, so that's what I got, a couple more iPads. So I've won several iPads over the years. And so the oldest iPad that I won 4 or 5 years ago, it's pretty beat up and it's cracked. It's got a big crack in the corner, crack going across the screen. But it's still functional. Just looks bad. So I have three children. I had one cracked, damaged iPad, right? So I win the iPads, two of them, because I told my sales manager, I said, I don't want to go to Miami, but I got three kids and two iPads. Oh, no. I said, I got three kids and one iPad, which is true. And I also have another iPad that I didn't mention, but that had nothing to do with what I was driving for. I wanted two more iPads, was the bottom line. And I said, this is going to cost you a lot less than a trip to Miami. So I talked him into it. He sends me the two iPads. And it comes time to divvy up the iPads amongst the children. And my oldest daughter took the cracked, damaged iPad and gave the two brand new iPads to her little sisters. which I found very impressive. That's probably not how I would have behaved at her age. She being the most advanced iPad user in the house, but she gave the brand new ones to the little ones. She kept the cracked, damaged iPad. And I just thought, you know, my kid, I am raising my child better than I was raised. That was just an indication to me that that was the case. Nothing against my mom and dad. They did the best they could with what they had. She's also just a better person than I was at her age. So there, I've bragged upon my children. Thank you very much. Now let's get to haircuts, because I'm in a bit of a haircut dilemma. Now, I wear my hair short, very short, and so I have to get a haircut once a month, once every 6 weeks, tops. And so I've developed a habit. I go and I sit down in the chair. First of all, I try to get an older person to cut my hair. I try not to get the young girl with the phoenix tattooed on her neck and the ring through her nose and the spike through her lip, although that's pretty hard to avoid anymore. You almost have to settle for a tatted-up, pierced freak to cut your hair. I don't know why that is, but for some reason that industry attracts people who are into that sort of thing. So last week I'm in somewhere in the metropolitan area, and I realized I had an hour, and I could get a haircut finally. So I sit down in the chair, and I tell the lady, I say, all right, take a look at my hair. Look at it, okay? So you see how I'm wearing it? She says, yeah. I said, all right, this is the way I wear my hair. I've been wearing my hair like this for 25 years. I'm not going to change how I wear my hair. So just take a look at it. Realize that this is how I'm going to comb my hair when you're finished. And then just use your best professional judgment. You're a trained professional. I trust you. I know you can do a good job. And then I let them cut my hair. But invariably, unless it's an older lady, and by older I mean 40 plus, if she's under 40, she cannot cut my hair the way I comb my hair. It's just she can't do it. She can't bring herself to do it. So I'm combing my hair this morning. I'm looking in the mirror. I had a haircut, three, 4 days ago. Usually after 3 or 4 days, things have settled down, and I look normal again. But this morning, I'm looking at it. I'm like, what did this person do to my hair? So I'm in the chair, and she cuts it, and she seems to be doing a decent job. But at the end, I realize that everything behind the very front row of hairs, she has combed forward, like the Julius Caesar look or something. But I didn't say anything. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Gave her a tip. I left. I figured, 3, 4 days later, it's going to be fine. Well, it still doesn't look fine. So the thing is, after I get a haircut for the first 3 days, whenever I see someone, the first thing I want to say is, hey, look, I'm not responsible for what happened here with my hair. I just want you to know that. This isn't something I planned. I didn't want to look this way. And now I have to go to church tomorrow, Easter Sunday. There will be a big crowd, and I'm going to be thinking everybody's looking at my whacked-out hair job. Look at this haircut. No, maybe I'm obsessing over myself too much.
I never noticed.
Anyway. You never notice. Well, that's encouraging.
Maybe it was the weekend.
Anyway, if I see you, if any of my listeners are at Denver Bible Church tomorrow, just understand that I'm not responsible for what happened here. And I'm hoping that it'll get better, but it's just a disaster. And I need someone else to cut my hair on a regular basis. Someone who doesn't want to mold my hairdo into what they think it should be. So there, I've gotten that off my chest. What else? Let's see. I really don't want to go to the news because it's just so disgusting. Filthy. The election, it's just degenerated to, it's like ninth grade. It's just unbelievable. I'll probably have to talk about that some. Let's talk about, should I talk about terrorism? So Monday night, I'm watching CNN. This is shortly after a U.S. Marine was killed in Iraq. I was still pretty upset about that. Reporter for CNN comes on the television, and this reporter is providing operational intelligence on the Marine firebase that was attacked, where the Marine was killed. Well, it's about 23 kilometers south-southeast of Mosul. There are 203 Marines, 19 officers. Just goes on and on. I couldn't believe it. And then I don't know if it was the next night or the same night, there's a CNN reporter on an aircraft carrier, the USS John C. Stennis, and this CNN reporter is giving a tour, a guided tour of an aircraft carrier. And I'm thinking, who's letting these people know about our bases, and who would dare let them on board one of our ships? And then I realized it's Barry Ho. That's Barry Ho giving operational intelligence to CNN, obviously an enemy of the state, since the day they were founded. Anyway, I was very shocked that that would be allowed to happen. And that's, see, I watch CNN to keep up with the most radical of our enemies. And so if you ever wanted to know how exactly where to go on the USS John C. Stennis to do something bad or hurtful, well, just download that CNN report. And if you're looking for a Marine firebase to launch mortars, well, there's a CNN report that'll practically give you coordinates. Just unbelievable. And then Tuesday night, I hear that Belgian authorities have arrested a terrorist associated with the Paris attacks. Arrested. And I thought to myself, this is why we're going to lose this war. These terrorists don't need to be arrested. Once they're found, if they're identified, they need to be questioned for a few hours and then publicly shot and killed on television, preferably in front of God and everyone. Arrest. And so while the Belgian officials were processing the extradition paperwork and negotiating extradition with the officials in France, the airport in Brussels blew up. The train station in Brussels blew up. And this morning, I did see one encouraging report. A terrorist was spotted in Brussels. It was thought that he had a bomb, and so they shot and killed him and then dragged his body away from what they thought was a bomb. And they didn't arrest him. There was no extradition necessary. And this is how you handle terrorists who are attacking urban areas. They are to be eliminated, to be killed with extreme prejudice, for crying out loud. So, yeah, I did say that this is why we're going to lose this war. I'm very pessimistic about the war. And Europe is, Europe, what can you say about Europe? Look at the reaction to the terrorist attacks in Brussels. Their first reaction was to announce 3 days of mourning. Three days of mourning. After that, the Eurotrash pagans decided that they were going to host a march against fear. They were going to march against fear and light their candles in a daze and march down the streets on Easter Sunday. But they had to cancel the march against fear because of fear. They were afraid that there would be a terrorist attack, and the officials said, please, could you cancel the march against fear? And when the organizers said, well, why? The officials said, well, it's because we're afraid. And you should be afraid, too. And so they've canceled the march against fear. But that doesn't mean that they're not afraid, if that makes any sense, which I don't think it does. But I was disgusted with the aforementioned Eurotrash, neo-pagan, post-Christians, with their lighting of candles and singing John Lennon's Imagine. This is the response of Europe to their imminent conquest by the Islamist hordes. This is their reaction. They get together, hug each other, sing Imagine, and then go to the bathhouse. Back, it's the Weekly Worldview. Thank you, boys. Yes, Europe is lost, but America is hot on her heels. Anyway, everybody's living in a state of well, not fear, but just tension. Just tension. Are there going to be more attacks? Are they going to attack in the United States? I was just reading that an ISIS official, whatever that is, says that, well, the Brussels attacks were really just, we're just rehearsing for our big, big, big attacks on America. Yeah. And now, unfortunately, in our airports, in our train stations, people are pretty much disarmed, at least ostensibly. I sure hope some people are packing, although there aren't too many people packing in the airport, and that needs to change. If you're not flying, if you're just dropping someone off and you're going to be in the airport, if you have a permit, you should carry a gun. Although they may put scanners at the door of the airport now, just to make sure so that the terrorist, who's the inside guy, and gets the guns into the airport, when that happens, nobody else will have a gun. It's just a very depressing situation to think about it. So let's change the subject. I saw a report the other day here in Denver. The sheriff's department is now issuing trauma kits to all the police with this really cool tourniquet. And I remember I was issued a tourniquet once, and that a trauma kit with a tourniquet. But that was when I was in the military and we thought we were about to be flown off into some kind of combat zone. Now the cops in Denver get tourniquets. Why? Because they're living in a combat zone. It's as if every day another law enforcement officer is shot or assaulted. Got to be scary for those guys. So they need tourniquets now, for crying out loud. Anyway, people hate the police. We got an artist here in Denver, a 10-year-old, who hung up a painting of a police officer with a KKK hood pointing a pistol at a black infant child. And what happens? The mayor and the police chief, they go to meet with her and tell her that they understand her concerns. 10th grade. She needs a slap across her face is what she needs, in my humble opinion. Yeah, the mayor should have met with her. The first thing he should have given her was the back of his hand. But he's a slope-shouldered commie. What's our mayor? I can't even remember his name. What's it? No, Hickenlooper's the governor. That's another slope-shouldered loser. Anyway, I don't even know who the mayor is, and I don't like him. Because he didn't. Nobody slapped this kid around, which is what the kid needed. The child is just a victim of her public education. And the pop culture and all of that. Well, I don't know. By 10th grade, I was a moron in 10th grade. But I got the back of the hand. That straightened me out. That's what the girl needed. All right. So anyway, I feel sorry for the police that they have to carry around a trauma kit as if they're about to go into combat. But, well, they're pretty much going into combat. Well, I want to give my props to the Alabama State Legislature for hearing the personhood bill this past week, a bill that would declare that life begins at conception and would ban the killing of innocent people. Can you believe we have to vote on a law to stop killing innocent people? Isn't that unbelievable? You'd think that the governor of Alabama would just wake up one morning and say, wait a second, how about we just stop killing innocent people? I don't think we need to vote on this. How about we just send the National Guard in and shut down any place that kills innocent people? No need to vote. You would think that the existing laws, well, I'm glad they at least had a hearing on the personhood bill in Alabama. And we hope that whatever happens, we hope that it will increase social tension around the issue of American people, innocent American people being slaughtered. Hopefully we can just keep elevating the tension. I don't really harbor much hope that we are going to win on this issue in any sort of democratic fashion. I don't. And I think it's because too many people have participated in the act. They've either paid for one, they've had one, they've talked their friend into having one. There's just an awful lot of guilt. And it's very difficult to get people to repent when they feel guilty unless they're scared. And, well, then that's where the terrorists come in. And the reason that we and Europe are so weak and have left ourselves open to be attacked by backwards, third-world, brain-damaged people is because we've turned our back on God's children and on God himself. And so that leaves us open. And so I apparently the Christians are not able to shake the people into realizing what's happening, the Holocaust that they're participating in. Maybe the terrorists will. And now, isn't that a sad state of affairs? Meanwhile, in North Carolina, the legislature there passed a new law to keep men out of the ladies' room. And that's another, exactly, what? So we have to pass a law for that? I mean, that right there is a barometer of where we are as a civilization. When you're having a debate in the legislature about whether or not men should be allowed in the ladies' room, there's a problem, folks. Common sense has left the building. Anyway, they passed it. And I suppose we could look at this as a victory because they passed a bill that said boys can't go in the girls' rooms even if they think they're girls. Even if they wear makeup like girls and dresses, even if their anatomy has been modified to resemble that of a female, they will not be allowed to go in the ladies' restroom. And I'll take it as a victory, I suppose. But the fact that it's even up for debate leaves me somewhat confused and concerned about the future of Western civilization. But there we are. So let's go to the news, I suppose. If you want to hear some news, we have some news. I've got a story here from the Daily Mail in London about a woman who faked being a lawyer for about 10 years. She used forged documents and pretended to be a lawyer for a decade, and she was in line to be named a partner at the law firm. And then someone finally did a background check, and her fraud was discovered. A lady lives in Pennsylvania. She's 45 years old. They say she fooled the law firm by forging a law license, bar exam results, an email showing she attended Duquesne University Law School, and she had a canceled check for a state attorney registration fee. And she fooled everyone in the firm. Well, yeah, she'd be a great lawyer. You kidding me? They should have made her a partner. Anyone who can deceive on that level is highly qualified to be a lawyer. She handled estate planning for more than 30 clients, despite never having attended law school nor being admitted to the bar, which for some reason is illegal, apparently. I guess you can't represent that you're a lawyer when you're not. because that's a lie.
Maybe they can sue. She can sue.
That's perhaps she will be sued. Or no, you're saying she could sue.
Yeah.
She could sue them for being incompetent, for not figuring out that she wasn't a lawyer. Let's see. She was the past president of the Huntingdon County, Pennsylvania Bar Association. She was the president of the Bar Association. Anyway, I don't think lawyers are all that smart, to be honest with you. I know they're good at schoolwork and whatnot, but I've never been all that impressed with most of the lawyers I've met. But I probably would have been impressed with this young lady. Absolutely. That's, if she didn't go to law school, then she probably should. No, actually, we hope that she washes her hands of that entire industry and realizes that it would be much better for her to make an honest living. And we'll keep track of this story. You can bet on that. No, we won't follow up in any way on this story. It's just kind of a quick hit for a laugh. Now, there's a television show on a network called Home Box Office that some of you people may be familiar with. It's called Hard Knocks, and it's about the NFL. I myself have never seen it, in as much as I do not allow Home Box Office into my house, and I don't know anything that's going on HBO, except for, what's his name, Bill Maher. And the only reason I know what's happening with Bill Maher is because Breitbart reports on what Bill Maher says almost every day. Almost every day, Bill Maher gets some FaceTime on Breitbart's website. I don't understand their obsession with Bill Maher. It's as if younger conservatives, like the boys and girls who run Breitbart, it's as if they want to have some acceptance within the hip pop culture community. And to them, Bill Maher is the hip pop culture community. And so whenever he says something that they agree with, they put him up. They say he says something they disagree with, they put him up on their website. I guess he endorsed Ted Cruz, and for some reason that was big news. Breitbart had coverage of Bill Maher. So anyway, that's the extent of my knowledge of HBO comes from Breitbart's obsession with covering Bill Maher. And I don't know about this show, Hard Knocks. I have not seen it, but it is apparently something of a reality show where HBO puts their cameras in the locker room, on the sidelines, at people's houses, under their car, in their trash cans, in their medicine cabinet for a whole season. And apparently, NFL teams, they're not that thrilled about having to do the show. But apparently the NFL has signed a very lucrative contract with HBO. And teams are regularly cajoled into allowing HBO to cover them for the season. Well, apparently, the Los Angeles Rams, now they were the St. Louis Rams back a year or two ago, 2014, they did not want to do the show Hard Knocks on HBO because it just disrupts the whole football thing. And they didn't want to do it, and so the NFL said, okay, here's the deal. You won't have to do HBO's show Hard Knocks and have their cameras in your medicine cabinet, in your bedroom, in your closet, if you will draft Michael Sam. And St. Louis said, all right, we'll draft him. And so they drafted him. They drafted him. You guys remember who Michael Sam is, right? Do you remember? You don't remember. Very few people remember who Michael Sam is. He was the first openly homosexual player to come out, big come out party with his boyfriend and everything there in the NFL. He was the very first one. He couldn't make the team. He wasn't very good. But the NFL took the deal. They drafted him. And then as soon as they got out of the HBO gig, they cut him. Yeah, they didn't want to do Hard Knocks. Michael Sam continues. He signed a contract with a Montreal football team. And he played one game, and then he left the team for what he called mental health reasons. Maybe finally coming to the grips with the fact that if you're a homosexual, you have a mental problem. Maybe. And so maybe there's hope for Michael Sam, but there's very little hope for the NFL. What a wicked and corrupt and foul, disgusting group to basically blackmail a team into drafting someone who they know is not going to make the team just to make a politically correct statement. I mean, forget the head trauma, right? Forget the concussions, for crying out loud. I mean, damage to the brain is one thing. That's to be expected in the NFL. But this is damage to the nation's soul. Away, Angus. What's the deal with that solo? Like, the first half of the solo, he wasn't even trying.
So, I missed a few notes, whatever. Turn it up loud and nobody's gonna know.
I was hanging out with my 14-year-old daughter the other night. She's playing guitar. She just realized that when she turns on the distortion, you don't notice the mistakes. she just realized that. Anyway, it's so neat to see a child's eyes light up when they realize something for the first time. That's right. That's right. I may teach her a bar chord now. She'll be like, what? I've been doing this the whole time? You could have taught me the bar chord from the beginning? I didn't want to ruin her. I didn't want to ruin her. That's all. All right. Now, let's see. I've got a headline here from WorldNet Daily. The headline screams, was Trump 2016 prophesied centuries ago? Which is quite the effective headline for WorldNet Daily. Because people who go to WorldNet Daily on a daily basis, they're generally obsessed with prophecies of all kinds, all sorts. Prophecy, yes, prophecies from real, genuine prophecies from the Bible, to made-up fake prophecies, to prophecies that you kind of got to squeeze and twist a little to make them fit, and all the way to Nostradamus. I mean, they're just into that sort of stuff. So was Trump 2016 prophesied centuries ago? Kudos to Matt Barber, the author, for a very effective headline for his WorldNet Daily listeners. And he, when I clicked it, I'm not a big prophecy guy. I mean, I'm into prophecies that are in the Bible, but I'm not big into the end times and, you know, trying to find the Antichrist and all that. Just not that. It's not for me. If you like to do that sort of thing, God bless you. That's great. I'm just not that into it. When I saw the headline associated with Matt Barber, I thought to myself, I'll bet that's not what it appears to be. I'll bet Matt is not implying that there was an actual prophecy. So I clicked through to see what Matt was up to, and sure enough, I was right. Matt was making an allusion to a Dutch politician and historian, one Guillaume Groen van Prinster. Guillaume Groen van Prinster, who lived in the 1800s. And Matt says he's credited with what seems an eerily prescient foreshadowing of the bizarre phenomenon that is Trump 2016. And here's what Guillaume Groen van Prinster wrote. In the mid-1800s, he said, pent-up anger and long-held frustration due to economic stagnation, moral decay, spiritual impotency, and political corruption invariably paved the way for the rise of crass manipulators. Instead of a mastery of truth, such revolutionary opportunists tap into fear and rage, ignorance and prejudice, staging great public spectacles of narcissism. Unquote. It's great public spectacles of narcissism. That's Donald Trump's entire adult life, as far as I can recall. I mean, can you go in the Wayback Machine with me, kids, and try to remember? Donald Trump has been a running joke for 30 years with the hair and the bellicose and the you're fired and just his whole act. And I know it wasn't just me. I know it wasn't. The guy's a running joke, and he could be the next president. So after Matt Barber reveals Guillaume Groen von Prinsterer's prescient writing, he says, "Enter Donald Trump." Matt Barber says, "He's a several times bankrupt, big government globalist, pro-socialized medicine, pro-abortion, pro-gay marriage, lifelong Democrat. Here he is to save the day. That is, at least to peddle the right kind of snake oil and bark the right kind of empty 'Make America Great Again' platitudes that festering wounds crave and itching ears want to hear." So for those of you in the audience who are not Christian, the itching ears, that was a direct slap against people who profess Christ and yet support Donald Trump. Yes. Well, if you'll have to look it up, I'm not going to tell you everything. It's an inside thing in the Christian community, the itching ears. So Google it and read the Bible. Heathen, if you're not a Christian, maybe you should look into it. All right. Now, Matt says, regarding Christians who support Trump, he says, "It's wayward support, in my view." Never like that, "in my view." I mean, if you think their support for Trump is wayward, Matt, just say it. I wouldn't have said "in my view." I would have just said their misplaced, gullible, stupid, foolish support for a naked charlatan like Donald Trump. But Matt's obviously a nicer guy than I am. And so he says it's wayward support, in my view. He says it's a lack of faithfulness amongst the Christians. He says it's a trusting of the things of this world rather than in the promises of God. And then he quotes James, and this is a rough one. All of you people who think the New Testament is all full of niceness and forgiveness and all that, get a load of this one from James. He says, "Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." Unquote, James the Apostle. Thank you very much. And so we thank Matt Barber for his prescient retelling, revelation of the writings of... I mispronounced his name. It's not Guillermo. It's Guillaume. Guillaume Groen von Prinsterer. I can't even pronounce his name. That's embarrassing. But anyway, just because I can't pronounce his name doesn't mean that he is smarter than I am. I mean, he is smarter than I am is what I'm trying to say. We'll just call him Van because that part's easy. Van, definitely smarter than I am and definitely saw through charlatans, not unlike Donald Trump, probably in his own day. And we're thankful to Matt Barber for the revelation. Thank you very much. Yes, so this week Glenn Beck caused quite a controversy by saying that any real Christian would not vote for Trump. If you're a real Christian, you would not vote for Trump. And that just shows that Glenn Beck doesn't know a lot of Christians. Well, seeing as he's a Mormon, he doesn't hang out with Christians generally. And just so you know, Glenn, Christians do really stupid things all the time. So you really shouldn't be surprised that they're voting for Donald Trump. But I do agree with Mr. Beck on that point, that if you're a real Christian, you'd have a really, really hard time voting for Donald Trump. Please. Forget voting for him. Just listening to him for more than 30 seconds. I mean, I like the sound bites where he calls stupid people stupid. I like to get a laugh. So as a buffoon and a clown, Trump, he's all right. But as a legitimate political option, please give me a break. You people are unbelievable. All right. Now, speaking of God, We go to the science, really, file with this headline on Drudge. I forget the headline Drudge had on this story, but it basically implied that in order to believe in God, you must dismiss rational thought, something like that. Anyway, the headline from The Independent in London is What Believing in God Does to Your Brain. And the author says humans suppress areas of the brain used for analytical thinking and engage the parts responsible for empathy in order to believe in God, according to researchers. And so I read that, and I think, you know, that's probably true. Because if you look at life just from a strictly analytical, utilitarian way, you may never seek God. And so you have to go to the more emotional, empathetic side of your nature, the side that's not material and not physical, in order to have a relationship with the living God, since the living God is spiritual. He's not physical. So Drudge's headline did not match the first sentence of the article, because they didn't say you have to suspend analytical thought. They just said that you use a different part of your brain. The author goes on that people who think about the physical world do the opposite. They rely on the area of the brain responsible for analytical thinking. From the analytical point of view, faith may seem absurd, said a professor who led the research. The leap of faith to believe in the supernatural amounts to pushing aside the critical, analytical way of thinking. And then I think he's right. I think he's right. Not that the analytical, intelligent thinking person can't believe in God. That's not what I'm saying. I just think that researchers have discovered that belief and faith is not necessarily reliant on analysis of the physical world. That's all. This research, by the way, was published in the journal Plus One. Researchers found that people with faith were more empathetic than those without. Yes, that's why there are very few hospitals named after atheists, right? Not so many. Not too many orphanages named after, let's say, the guy from Playboy. What's his name? That filthy old man from Playboy? I don't think there's any orphanages named after him, nor shall there be. So, I can't remember his name. We won't utter his name. Playboy's for sale, by the way. They're asking $500 million, was it, or was it $500 billion? I think it was $500 million. They're asking for the wretched legacy of a dirty old man. It's on the market. So, for whatever that's worth. Why did I even mention that? Anyway, probably just because I hope that guy dies soon so he can meet God. I'd like him to be at death's door and realize that he's actually about to die, because maybe he would repent. And that's the only reason I hope he would die. I don't want him to get hurt or anything like that. I'd like him to repent. Well, I'm just saying that to be nice. I don't want him to be assaulted in any way or criminally molested in any way. All right. So anyway, to finish out this article, pushing aside a naturalistic worldview enables you to delve deeper into the social emotional side, said another professor, and that may be the key to why belief in the supernatural exists throughout the history of cultures. It appeals to a non-material way of understanding the world and our place in it. So the only thing they left out of that is the reason the belief in the supernatural exists throughout all of human history and in all cultures is because we're not just physical. We're spiritual. And we know that. There's a lot of evidence that everybody knows that, even the people who claim they're atheists. They know that this is not all just physical. There's something else. It's spiritual. We think, therefore, we are. So, despite the headlines implying that in order to believe in God, you have to suspend rationality, that's not what the article says it all, and it's not what the study implies at all. And I'll put a link up on the summary of the show there on my blog, and you can decide for yourself. All right. Now, another one from the science, really, file. Red bread mold may be used for better rechargeable batteries. Yes, isn't that? I just found this fascinating. A new bread mold, there's a new one. A new bread mold may create sustainable electrochemical materials to produce rechargeable batteries. Yes, there's been a study. The electrochemical properties of the carbonized fungal biomass mineral composite were tested in a supercapacitor and a lithium-ion battery, and the composite was found to have excellent electrochemical properties. What's the name of this particular fungus? Here it is. Neurospora crassa, just in case you're keeping track. The electrochemical properties could be used in supercapacitors or in lithium-ion batteries. It's promising. The findings were published in the March issue of Current Biology. And so I just found it fascinating that we're only now discovering at our advanced technological stage, we're so advanced that we got an eye watch, we've got an eye pencil, and we're only beginning to discover the near miraculous properties of God's creation. Yes, when we get to the other side, God's going to say, look, if you people hadn't got all obsessed with one another and sin and all that, you could have run the whole thing on fungus. I had it all worked out, but you got distracted. Look what you end up with. Thinking themselves wise, they became fools. Yes, researchers have found a fish that walks the way land vertebrates do. Yes. Uh-huh. I watched the video. This is pretty cool. I mean, this fish looks like it's walking. It looks like it has hips. It's pretty neat. Yes, it's one of the most famous chapters in evolution, says the New York Times author. Yes. They say, what is the most famous chapter? It's 375 million years ago. As we all know, our ancestors emerged from the sea, evolving from swimming fish to vertebrates that walked on land. Yes, hence, this story hails to us from the science, really, file. The New York Times goes on to say that scientists still puzzle over exactly how the transition from sea to land took place. They've had to rely on information gleaned from fossils of some of the intermediate species, says the New York Times, as if it's a fact. With a straight face in front of God and everybody, they say that there are intermediate species and we've got the fossils, which is not true. It's simply not true. But there it is in the New York Times, stated as if it's a fact. And now, of course, they think they've discovered the missing link, I guess. Although apparently the link's not missing, at least in the eyes of the New York Times. There's all kinds of intermediate species. But the fact is, there is no fossil that is agreed upon within the evolutionary community as an intermediate fossil. And if there were such a thing, it would shake the scientific world. It would be the biggest story in the circles of evolutionary thought in the universities and certainly at the New York Times. But they just state it as if it's a fact because people are stupid. And they'll just keep on reading. Oh, this is interesting. I remember seeing all those intermediate species when I was in grade school. Yeah. Well, the fact is that scientists have discovered a blind fish that walks the way land vertebrates do. The waterfall-climbing cave fish, Cryptora famicola, has even evolved many of the skeletal features that our ancestors did for walking, including a full-blown pelvis, they say. Now, I'm not sure why this fish hasn't gone ahead and evolved. I don't know why it's still blind and climbing around in caves, but it is. A biologist at the Royal Veterinary College at the University of London says it's a good example of how much fish diversity there is left to be discovered. Now, there is a true statement buried here. There's an awful lot of stuff that we just don't know and that we just haven't seen. And this particular fish is a very cool example of that. The Times goes on to report that all tetrapods descend from a single ancestor, a single lineage of fish that managed to spread onto land. And they, yeah, right. So they state that as if it's a fact, ignoring the fact that this fish is not apparently, didn't quite make it into that line. I mean, if there was a fish that was ever going to walk on land, why wouldn't it be the fish with the pelvis? Yeah. How come that didn't work out? But you're not supposed to ask any of that. You're just supposed to believe it. Just like the many fossils of intermediate species. Don't ask questions. Just nothing to see here, folks. This is just one of our ancestors. It didn't quite make it. He went blind trying, though. Anyway. So there you have it from the science. Really? File. Now, let's see here. Let's go to the war. As if the New York Times isn't depressing enough. The Associated Press is reporting that Americans have been killed, in fact, by prisoners released from the detention center at Guantanamo Bay. This, according to a senior Defense Department official who spoke before lawmakers last Wednesday. There was sharp criticism from Republicans because they want to keep Guantanamo open. The Democrats, they want to close Guantanamo. Well, Paul Lewis, the Pentagon's special envoy for Guantanamo detention closure, I'm sure all of his life that's what he wanted to be. Right, grew up, went to college. I want to be the envoy, the special envoy, as a matter of fact, for Guantanamo detention closure. Well, he did admit to lawmakers that Guantanamo detainees have been released and have killed Americans. But he declined to provide any other details. He would not say whether the incidents occurred before or after President Barack Obama took office in January 2009. And that's because, well, George W. Bush released his fair share of terrorist murderers from Guantanamo Bay. Listen to what this guy said. He's an appointee of Barack Obama. He said, unfortunately, there have been Americans that have died because of Guantanamo detainees. That's an interesting way to put it. They've died. Like what? Did they catch the flu from them and get sick? He says, we don't want anybody to die because we transfer detainees. Talk about removing yourself and your boss from any responsibility for anything. That's what this guy is specially trained in. Deflecting any blame or any guilt for anything that ever happened from me or my boss. We don't want anybody to die because we transfer detainees. You didn't transfer them. You released them. Back to Muslim countries. We know what you did. What do you think? We're a bunch of idiots out here? I think he does think we're a bunch of idiots out here. Well, I'm here to prove him wrong. And I know you are, too, if you listen to the broadcast. Thank you very much for doing so. By the way, during the Bush administration, 532 prisoners were released from Guantanamo. During Barry Ho's administration, he's released 144. The State Department's special envoy for Guantanamo closure argued the prison is a powerful propaganda tool for the Islamic State. And he says keeping it open, well, that damages it. It damages U.S. national security. And I actually partially agree with this bozo because we should just kill all the prisoners at Guantanamo. I'm talking, you interview these guys for at most 3 hours, and then you start killing them in front of their buddies. And before too long, you're going to find folks who aren't quite ready to meet Allah. And they'll give up their buddies. Detaining people for 10, 15 years, it's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. So I partially agree with the, whatever. Let's move on. America has a death penalty dilemma, according to CNN. Supplies of lethal injection drugs are running low. New sources are increasingly difficult to come by. And states are grappling with alternatives. It's so bad that in Virginia, the legislature has actually considering bringing back the electric chair. Yeah. CNN says in just the last 6 years, 17 states have executed 242 inmates. That's in 6 years. So how many murders are there a year in this country? 10, 12,000? So let's see, with a simple math exercise, children, 6 times 10,000, well, that's 60,000 murders. So it seems to me that we've fallen behind quite a bit. I wouldn't be so startled there, all the girls at CNN. Let's see, in 2010, they report that European drug manufacturers began to ban exports of the lethal injection cocktail of drugs. Started banning exports of those ingredients. Hospira stopped making sodium thiopental. Denmark company banned U.S. prisons from using its pentobarbital. And then the U.K. introduced a ban on exporting sodium thiopental. All these drugs that we were so reliant on to execute convicted murderers. And the electric chair, are you kidding me? The electric chair? Please. Folks, the victim's family should be the one to decide how the convicted murderer should be executed. It's inexpensive, and it serves the interest of justice by relieving the social tension in a family, in a community, in a state. It relieves the social tension that's left over after a city, a family's been gripped by something as horrible as a murder. There's a lot of tension. And one way to release that tension is to allow the people directly affected to decide how to execute the convicted murderer. And so, and it would be, the electric chair is just barbaric. And it's expensive, all that electricity, for crying out loud. I mean, what about the trees? What about the fossil fuels that are having to be burned? The hands of the victim's family should be the first upon the convicted murderer. Now, reason number 1,040 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. There was a fist fight at a high school in Hepzibah, Georgia, and two girls went toe-to-toe in a residential street. Others joined the fray. There's video of this apparently on the internet. Others joined the fight, some wielding bats, pipes, others just their fists. And at the end of it all, an 18-year-old boy was dead. The sheriff has accused 9 people, including 6 high school students, of murder. As many as 50 people, many of them students at Glen Hills High School in Augusta, Georgia, participated in the brawl that resulted in the death of Demaje Bell. 18 years old, he was stabbed in the neck, died at the hospital 2 days later. They say the dispute began as a high school drama. And listen to this quote. The sheriff said, you know, the drama that happens in high school. And everybody has gone through it. I had a friend when I was young. I was in fifth grade, I think. I had a friend who was attacked. And this was in middle school, junior high school. He was attacked and he was kicked and beaten, laughed at, mocked, and spit upon the entire 2.5 blocks from the high school to his house. And I remember looking at the crowd and thinking, this is what it was like in the days of Noah. This is what it was like. That's the kind of drama I witnessed in my public school career. This kid was traumatized for the rest of his life. It was horrifying. He was not murdered. In this case, an 18-year-old was stabbed and murdered. But everybody hasn't gone through the drama, okay? And you don't have to put your kids through that. My children have not experienced that type of drama. Hence, my 14-year-old takes the cracked iPad and gives the brand new iPads to her little sisters because she hasn't been traumatized to this degree yet. So I suggest that if you are considering sending your children to the government schools, or if you are in fact doing so, you are sinning against your child and against God, and now you've been made aware of that, and you should do something about that. Now, reason number 1,041 to keep or get your children out of the government schools is they may end up at UC Berkeley, where the student government is demanding free abortions. Yes, free abortions. They say that administrators should take a cut in pay, and that money should be used to provide free abortions to female students. And they say not to do so is a violation of women's rights. Yes, we have a quote from a student senator and the primary sponsor of the resolution for free abortions. She says she'd like to see the administrators take the pay cut to pay for medication abortions, they call them. Medication abortion, that's where you take a chemical pill that poisons the baby and kills the baby. So this student senator and primary sponsor of the resolution says, I believe that the university should, like, reorganize funds from, like, the administration's paychecks to university health services. I mean, administrators at UC Berkeley, like, receive more than generous paychecks. The university should reconsider and reprioritize its funding. Instead of investing money into the administration's paychecks, the university should be investing in students' health, she said. The Students for Life Club at Berkeley says that they are ready to support any students facing unplanned pregnancies so that they aren't forced to choose between their child and their education. And they say that they're dedicated to educating their peers on the atrocity of abortion. So, we're glad that there's a Student for Life Club at Berkeley, but I'm glad my kid is not a part of it in any way. And I hope that yours it never is as well. That's it. That's it for the special Saturday night version of the Weekly World View. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and American Right to Life, and of course my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.